It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The quarter,
P.J. Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. You can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Now, as always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, you can also catch our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here, hit that subscribe button, maybe drop us a review, leave us some stars, and above all else, share the podcast on social media. I would sincerely appreciate it. Now, for today's show, we're going to go through and relive some of the greatest games in Rockets histories and some of the reasons why those games are great. And we're going to do this with a little bit of personal creative license, I guess I will say. And I'm saying we because today I'm going to be joined by LaShard Binkley of Space City Scoop and Overtime Heroics. What's up, LaShard? How you doing today, my man?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Quarantine's getting to me just a little bit, you know, and yes. I'm sure you're on the same page as me and pretty much everybody else about missing sports.
Oh, but, definitely.
You know, that's what we still, you know, here at Locked On Rockets and tons of other places over at Space City Scoop included, you know, we're still doing our best to, you know, provide content and keep people engaged and, you know, talking about the Rockets, which is, you know, all we can do during a time like this, right?
Definitely. And I've definitely gotten used to YouTube and old NBA clips during this time for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, that, you know, YouTube is a treasure trove of being able to go back and kind of rewatch some older games and stuff like that. And, you know, it's probably some of the moments that you and I are going to be talking about here coming up, some of the, you know, greatest games in franchise history, you know, the only way to watch them is through YouTube. And, you know, yes. Especially for some younger fans, you know, I lean on the younger side of Rockets fandom because I'm not even 25 yet. I turned 25 in June. If I may ask, how old are you?
I am 42.
Okay, there we go. So yes. Your fandom extends a little bit further back than mine does. So
yes.
I think this is going to be interesting because for today's episode, you know, what we wanted to do is kind of gather up some of the greatest games in franchise history. And we picked out some of the, now for the listeners, for you guys, LaShard and I don't know which games the other one picked. So I wanted to go into this blind. And the reason for that is I figured that LaShard would pick probably some games, you know, from, I'm assuming there's some games from the 90s in there. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're right.
Okay, there we go. See, I took a little bit of liberty with the games that I picked because, you know, again, my fandom's a little bit younger and you know, my Rockets fandom started in the early 2000s. Like the Stevie franchise Rockets were really like my first vivid Rockets memories. And so I took a little bit of liberty. And even though people are going to argue that some of the games that I picked might not be the greatest games and there might be some better games to pick from, I picked the games that, you know, were the greatest games during my tenure as a Rockets fan so far. So the games that were closest to my heart, you know, since the early 2000s.
Yes, and I think some of them will intersect because, I mean, of course, there's been some great games lately. But yes, some of my games go all the way back to the 80s. So I'm sure we'll have a few that are different.
There we go. I like it. This is going to be a good contrast. Now, before we dive all the way into that, what I want to know is, you know, LaShard, can you give us a little bit of background on you? Kind of, you know, one, I'm assuming you're Houston born and bred, or are you a transplant?
Oh, no, I'm born in Houston all my life. Haven't lived anywhere else.
Okay. And so when did the Rockets fandom really kick in and kind of let us know how you got started, you know, with Space City Scoop and, you know, how you started kind of covering the team, you know, from that angle?
I was kind of a standard story to begin with. Grew up watching the Rockets. My dad was a huge fan. Growing up, I remember watching games on his old wood grain television in his room. Pretty much all the way back from when I was born in 77. Of course, I don't remember the first few years, but I do remember watching the Rockets and the Celtics in the finals and So I've been watching the Rockets pretty much all my life. I pretty much started sports writing within the last year. It's something that kind of just fell in my lap. I was online. I actually started writing for, and I still do write for, Overtime Heroics. I'm a senior writer for Overtime Heroics.
And okay.
They put out an ad saying, hey, we need sports writers. And it's something I've always wanted to do. I've always followed sports. I've always debated. Now I just have a little bit of a bigger platform to do it. So I started off with Overtime Heroics, and then eventually it kind of just morphed over to Space City, where they had an opening, and I figured, hey, why not write for two people at the same time so I can get even more of my Rocket knowledge out in the world. So that's kind of where it started, and it's been a great ride ever since. Been writing articles, been able to talk to some of the people I actually grew up watching, like Vernon Maxwell and Mario Ellie. So it's definitely been a great time this last year.
Yeah, and I noticed too that you have you're pretty good with video too, right? Like you're on Twitter, you're always throwing out videos, which I thought is really cool.
Yes, and that's actually something I just started recently a lot, since there's no live sports on. I figured, well, I need to do something else to kind of fill the time. So I started doing video editing and started adding music to it. And also I have my own Facebook group, Rockets for Life, that I run. I run that page. So I've been keeping pretty busy, even though it's not any live sports. So I try to put out as many videos as I can to kind of help people get through this.
Definitely. You know, and that's exactly what we got to do during this time. And, you know, I think that for a lot of people, sports are a way to kind of, it's a nice release. It's a way to kind of, you know, get away from everyday life. You know, you come home, Rockets are playing, you know, whoever they're playing that night, and you kind of sit down, watch the game, and kind of forget about, you know, everyday worries for 2-3 hours while you're enjoying the game. And we don't really get that right now with no sports. So it's nice to be able to have some distractions, you know, however small or big they may be throughout the day regarding sports. And I think that's why like The Last Dance has been so huge for so many people every Sunday, to be able to sit down for a couple hours and just, you know, zone out and really appreciate something the way that we used to do with sports like every other night.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, specifically with The Last Dance, I'm really interested to see if they cover any of the, you know, the 94-95 part of it, because I think that's kind of where they're up to now. So that'll definitely be interesting to see if they actually ask me any questions about it, if they actually comment about it, because I'm really interested to see how that part plays out.
Right. I mean, I think you, me, and all of the Rockets fans are interested to see how that part specifically plays out. But so without you know, putting it off any further, let's go ahead and let's dive into these games that we picked. And so I want to let you list off your six games first. So again, we picked 3 regular season games and we picked 3 playoff games. So you go ahead and list off your 6, I'll list off my 6, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty of them in the next segment.
Okay, yeah, definitely. So my first game was Yao's actual first game against Shaq. It was pretty much a really huge deal. It was his first year in the league. It was a lot of build up to that first game because, of course, everybody wanted to compare Yao and Shaq, and
absolutely,
Shaq was already in his prime. And it was an international story, not just a local story. And I just remember the build up to that game. So that's my first game. Second game was Harden's actual first game as a Rocket when they faced off against Detroit. Of course, that was kind of a precursor to all the great things to come. And my third regular season game, which, you know, like I said, maybe one of the ones that kind of intersect with yours, is, of course, the Harden game winner against the Warriors.
There we go. All right. Yeah. We got one overlap. All right. Good. Yes. Good stuff.
I definitely figured that would be one of them. as far as my playoff games, my first game I have is the Ralph Sampson game winner. I actually wrote a story about that a few weeks ago. So I definitely remember that game. I actually remember watching that game live. The other game was the 94-95 season, when Vernon Maxwell scored 30 points in the second half against Phoenix, where they were already down 2-0. They were about to go down 3-0, and, you know, probably – Clutch City never happens if you know, Vernon Maxwell doesn't bring him back.
Yeah. And that's a game because a lot of people, you know, will point to the kiss of death in that series, but, you know, not remember that game specifically from Maxwell's standpoint. So, okay. All right. Good stuff.
And the third game is probably one that people don't really remember for the game itself, but the weekend of the Memorial Day floods, when the Rockets and the Warriors were playing, Dwight Howard was here, the Rockets were already down 3-0, and, you know, Harden had probably one of his best games of his playoff career. So that would definitely be – that was my third game. I remember that game like it was yesterday.
Okay, that's – and that was the one too, right, where everybody got flooded into Toyota Center, or was that game three of that series? No, that was game four.
Yeah, that was game four, exactly. That was the one where everybody was stuck in Toyota Center, and Dwight Howard and some of the players were out on the court. So, like I said, I remember like it was yesterday. I remember listening to it on radio after the game and them – you know, talking to some of the players on the court, it was kind of surreal.
All right, good deal. Well, that's a nice slate of six games. I like that, and I can't wait to dive into those. Now, on my end, the six that I went with, and again, I'm showing my age here a little bit on some of these, but so my first regular season game, and I went way back, and I had to pick this one because it's an iconic moment that I don't think has been replicated by any other player since. But I went with the Rockets Spurs game, the 13-35 by Tracy McGrady.
Oh yes, so, definitely. I remember that one.
And I struggled with this because I almost didn't want to pick this game because of the sense of, you know, it wasn't necessarily a great game for the course of the game, but it was the end that was spectacular. And but again, it's never been replicated in NBA history. Had to pick that one.
Yeah, that's one of those games where you kind of remember. I remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly what I was wearing. I remember
all right, yep.
Pretty much everything about that night. That's
exactly.
Definitely one of those games.
I remember watching that in the TV room of the house that I grew up in, you know, right there with my dad. Oh, okay. next regular season game I got, and this is one that I've spoken about a handful of times already before, just in other, you know, having to do with other situations, other kind of weekly network promos that we've been doing here at Locked On, but it's going to be the Rockets' 22nd victory in a row over the LA Lakers. That game, you know, it was history in the making, and there were so many great storylines from that game. Rafer Alston becoming Ray Allen, Shane Battier's defense on Kobe Bryant, you know, Kobe Bryant really wanting the win, really wanting to stop the Rockets getting that 22nd win and just not being able to do it. Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
So I had to pick that game. And then my last regular season game, this is where we have the intersection, is James Harden's game winner over the Warriors in 2019, January 2019, 135-134. Hands down, I think one of the greatest three-point shots in Rockets history. Even though it's just regular season game, just that shot was something else.
Yeah, and it made it just even more special because of who he hit the shot on.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have Klay Thompson and then Draymond Green and then, not safe for work comments Harden made right after he made the shot.
Oh,
so it was definitely great.
Absolutely. And we have actually two repeats here in my playoff matchups. So the first of which, going all the way back to the 08-09 season, is actually going to be the Rockets winning game one against the eventual Western Conference champions, just NBA champions,
yes.
LA Lakers. That game, you know, Yao Ming goes off, Aaron Brooks has himself a game, you know, the Rockets are the underdogs in that series by no stretch of the imagination, but they walk into Staples and hand the Lakers a loss in the very first game of that series. And that game was something special. You know, that team had Yao not got, it always feels bad as Rockets fans because it feels like we always have to say, you know, if it weren't for an injury, you know, who knows what would have happened. And that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, that game gives me the Chris Paul vibes for sure. I remember watching Yao limping and kind of just getting the, you know, bad feeling in my stomach of what was coming next for sure.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's that one. And then, again, similar to the 13-35, I had to go with the Rockets' comeback against the Clippers because down 3-1 and just the flurry of three-pointers and scoring that happened in that game to keep the Rockets' playoff hopes alive against the Clippers back in the 14-15 season. I mean, I watch those highlights at least probably once a month. Like maybe not quite once a month, but like, I mean, sometimes like somebody will say something about it on Twitter and I'm like, you know what? It's been a minute since I've watched those highlights. Let me dig back and, you know, go watch Josh Smith go off against the Clippers and ruin Chris Paul and Blake Griffin's days.
Yes, Josh Smith, Corey Brewer, Jason Terry. I remember Pablo Prigioni. I mean, it was that was definitely a ragtag lineup for sure.
Right. And my last one that I had before we hit this first break is the – and this is the one that – there's some heartbreak in here, obviously, because of the Chris Paul injury. But it had to be game five against the Warriors because for so much of that game – now, that was a real game. Just, I mean, the pressure in that game from tip-off all the way until the final buzzer was insane. And just thinking about the final, you know, final few minutes of action and just how that game played out, being so conflicted with emotion after the win, but also wondering what was going on with Chris Paul and, you know, whether, you know, he was going to be available for game six or even game seven, just – that game has to be included for me personally because of the weight that was placed on that game.
Yes, and if I remember correctly, that's the Chris Paul shimmy game, correct?
That is the shimmy as well. Yes. Another iconic three-pointer that has to be up there in Rockets history, which I was surprised. They listed the Chris Paul, and we'll do this slight tangent first, but you know, they listed 35 plays for Chris Paul's 35th birthday. And I don't remember seeing the shimmy in there. Now, I skipped around a little bit, so I might have missed it somewhere, but I don't remember seeing the shimmy.
Yeah, I remember. I actually went through the list. Yeah, it wasn't on the list, and it's kind of weird because I think a lot of people don't necessarily see Chris Paul as a Rocket, so some of his Rockets highlights definitely should have been on there.
Right. I mean, he had his, you know, most of his – his most successful playoff run was as a Houston Rocket. So I don't see why people wouldn't consider him a Houston Rocket, but anyways, so those are our games, six games apiece with, it looks like we had the one overlapping game and for good reason, but we'll come back in just a second and kind of break down why each of these games, you know, were important to us. Some of the moments from them that really stand out. And we'll get to that in just 1 second. But first I have a quick word from our friends over at Built Bars. So look, guys, I've been talking about Built Bars, you know, quite a bit lately, and there's a reason for that. They're actually really, really good. So I just got turned on to Built Bars recently. They've got a bunch of different flavors, 16 amazing flavors to be specific. They've got 8 chocolate plus nut flavors. They've got 8 chocolate and then like nut-free flavors. My personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse, you just can't go wrong with it. Look, these bars are covered in 100% chocolate. And here's the thing about protein bars, right? If you've ever had a protein bar, sometimes they're like grimy or gritty or chalky. These aren't like that. They're delicious. They're soft. They're easy to chew. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. So whether you're just, you know, trying to get in shape, whether you're in shape and you're trying to maintain that shape, or whether you're just looking for a protein replacement throughout the day, Built Bars can help you out with that. So just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Remember, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with LaShard Binkley of Space City Scoop and Overtime Heroics as we kind of roll through some of the best games in Rockets franchise history with, again, with a little bit of creative license, you know, maybe a little asterisk around best, because there might be some games that you guys are thinking, oh, well, you know, they didn't include this game and this game should be included. But again, we're adding a little bit of personal flavor and, you know, to some of these games. And so the first one that we want to talk about, like I mentioned earlier, we're going regular season first, and then in the final segment we'll tackle the postseason games. Let's get to that Yao Shaq matchup, right? Because that was a game that was, I mean, the hype that was built up around that game was unreal.
Yeah, it was crazy because, like I said, this was, a lot of people had never really watched Yao because of course he was playing overseas and everybody knew Shaq, and I mean the hype internationally was crazy. It was so many reporters from other countries. I remember coming down to Houston. I mean, it was just a big story. It led the news. I mean, it was pretty much everywhere at that time.
And so in that game, if memory serves, and I'm working on pulling up the box score right now, I'm not sure if you already have it up on your end, but in that game, Yao actually held his own against Shaq, didn't he? Like, I mean, if I remember, there was, because I remember watching I watched it recently, Shaq kind of telling the story about his, you know, coming from his end of that first matchup with Yao, and he's thinking, you know, he goes up for a shot and Yao blocks it. Then he goes up again, Yao blocks it again. He's thinking, okay, now he needs to, like, he, you know, and you know how Shaq is when he's talking, you know, he's so I love Shaq, but he's very full of himself. And
definitely.
And he's like talking to the third person, like saying, all right, the diesel needs to turn it up a little bit. And I'm just like, one, who talks like that? And two, like just, I'm trying to, so do you have the box score on your end or no?
Yes. So, yeah, I have the box score. I mean, Shaq had a great game. I mean, don't get me wrong. He had 31 and 13 in that game. So he had a great game. But I do remember the very first play, y'all blocked his shot. So that kind of just told everybody that, you know, y'all wasn't exactly going in here scared against Shaq. So, I mean, like I say, but y'all finished with a double-double. He had a couple of great plays in the fourth quarter. Another thing that's kind of crazy about that game, well, not crazy, but something that people kind of forget is like Steve Francis actually had his career high in that game at the time. He actually ended up with 44 points that game. So that was kind of like a footnote that not everybody remembers, but I mean, Steve Francis probably had one of his best games of his career.
You know, and to me, one, I think it was great. If you ever go back and look at some of the early videos from Yao when he was first entering the league, one, the relationship that he shared with Steve Francis was really great. And I think that Francis was a phenomenal teammate for Yao to have, you know, kind of making that transition from China to the NBA and kind of getting acclimated to, you know, how the NBA kind of worked and just getting, you know, building that relationship. And then going from Steve to T-Mac as well, you know, you saw the relationship bloom between Tracy and Yao over the years and how much that, you know, that really meant to him to get, you know, to really immerse himself in American culture. But also, I do think that in that game, you know, just as far as the Yao Shaq deal goes, is Yao's one of the few centers that Shaq compliments. You know, when Shaq talks about the toughest centers that he's ever played, right? Yao is in that lineup of guys that he openly compliments, and so is Hakeem. And I think that's great that the Rockets had two of the centers that really gave Shaq trouble over the years.
Yeah, because if you think about it, Shaq faced Hakeem kind of early in his career. So Hakeem was already in his prime. He was at the height of his greatness. And then it kind of flip-flopped. It was Yao's, first year in the league, and then Shaq was already in his prime. So it's just kind of funny how they kind of bookend each other. And yeah, I mean, and both guys just they played Shaq great. I think Shaq learned a lot from Hakeem, and I think same thing with Yao learning from Shaq as well.
If there was ever one gripe that I had about Yao's game just over the years, which he got better about it towards the end, was just the lack of aggressiveness at times.
Yes.
And I mean, it comes to mind, you know, towards like the last couple seasons of his career where he really, you know, he would yam it over people like, and aggressively, like he would like show some emotion after dunks and stuff. And I remember being so hyped whenever Yao would show emotion because, you know, the Rockets were led by these two guys, T-Mac and Yao, who really didn't show a lot of emotion at time. You know, Trace McGrady kind of had the relaxed demeanor a lot of times, kind of the sleepy-eyed look a little bit. And then you had Yao, who was just a naturally kind of a reserved person. So when either of them ever showed any emotion on the court, I was like, yeah, let's go.
Yes, and it's funny you say that because I just remember watching those games with my dad, and that's like the first thing he would always say, like, I just wish Yao would just jam into somebody's face. Don't lay the ball up. You're 7'6". Just jam into someone's face.
Absolutely. Those memories are shared because, again, same thing on my, you know, on my end with my dad. Just, you know, could not fathom why a 7'6" dude wouldn't dunk the ball. And again, he got better about that as his career went on, which is, you know, that's, again, I could talk about Yao all day, but
yeah, and it's also, you got to think about his culture. Over playing over in China, that wasn't part of the game. You really didn't do that. So I don't think people really realize that it took him some time just to get used to that. That's just not part of the game where he used to play. So it just took him some time. And I just remember the one play I really remember when I knew he started to really do is when he dunked on Ben Wallace. And if people haven't seen that clip, they need to go back and watch that clip because he really actually showed a lot of emotion for like one of the first times ever. And that was like probably like one of the best Yao dunks I've seen.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, best things anybody's ever seen, I want to get into this next game, the 13 and 35, which remains one of the most iconic moments in NBA history. And you think back to that game. And I didn't have the privilege, unfortunately, of being at this game, but just watching it, you know, and I am a firm proponent of I will never turn a game off. I don't know about you, but I will sit through a game all the way until the final buzzer. And the reason for that is 13-35.
Yeah.
And I had an ex a while back that I was teaching her about basketball, and she got really into it because I think that anybody who has a passion for something, you know, it's really easy to share that passion with somebody else. And so I was teaching her about basketball and everything, and 13-35 was one of the first like video clips that I ever showed her, and kind of explained that, you know, in an NBA game, anything is possible, anything can happen. And that level of like excitement kind of, you know, it helped her learn the game. But specifically, like, that's why that moment is why I don't turn games off, because you really, the NBA is so volatile, I guess, like, yes, anything can happen at the end of a game. And that just, you think about each and every shot that went into that, you know, the inbounds that was basically, it probably was a 5 second violation, or if it wasn't a 5 second violation, like, they almost turned the ball over.
Yes.
Then you think about the and one where, you know, Tracy just casually flicks it up with, you know, Tim Duncan draped all over him, all over his, you know, shooting shoulder. That series of shots, and then the emotion, speaking of the emotion, right, between T-Mac and Yao, the fist pump from T-Mac as he hits the final shot was just beautiful. That's the word that I got to go with.
And it's just crazy because you think about the Spurs, pretty much entire Greg Popovich era, just never making mistakes. And it was just so many things just kind of just fell in place, them turning the ball over. And when does Duncan ever fall for a pump fake? And it's just a lot of things just seem to kind of just fall into place from McGrady to make those 13 points in 35 seconds. It was just crazy.
Right. And, you know, I think if that has to be, I'm trying to think of where I would put that as far as like Rockets moments. And, you know, maybe I'll have to save this for another podcast, but that's got to be up there as far as like top, I'd probably put it up there in like top 10, honestly.
Oh yeah, it definitely has to be. I mean, cause this was the time where, you know, people were really starting to see how great Tracy McGrady was and to see exactly why the Rockets made the move ahead. I mean, if I remember at the time, the Rockets were kind of, you know, struggling a little bit during that time. They really hadn't taken off. They were kind of around the 500 mark. And, you know, to beat a team like the Spurs, I mean, that was definitely a great win.
Yeah, they were either 9-11 going into that game or 9-11 right after that game. Yes. So right around that 500 mark. Now you'll have to forgive me, LaShard. I didn't write down your games on my end, which I probably should have done. But let's jump back into your next regular season game.
Well, the next game was was James Harden's first game as a Rocket. Right after that trade, which was just crazy to think about, especially considering it didn't really happen at the beginning of the season. It happened like right before the regular season started. So that made it even more of a kind of an unlikely scenario. And also just thinking about, I mean, people knew about James Harden, but nobody really knew how great he would become. I remember Daryl Morey saying many times, he didn't even think James Harden would become this great. I mean, he knew he was a great player, but I mean, after this first game against Detroit, it just kind of, everything just fell into place after that. I just remember watching that game and him going off, and Detroit, you know, wasn't a horrible team at the time. He had 35 plus points, 12 assists. And I think that's the biggest thing that I got from that game, was just seeing how great of a passer he was. I had no idea that he was that great of a passer.
And it, you know, it took a couple more years, you know, or a few more years, I should say, after that, you know, until Mike D'Antoni makes it to Houston and really officially puts the ball in James Harden's hands and kind of unlocks, you know, this elite passing version of James. But the passing was always there, right? He's been, you know, a multifaceted guard his entire career. And you're right, that first game, I don't want to say it was eye-opening, because it's not, oh, he has the first game against Detroit and everybody thinks, okay, this is like a future MVP candidate. But it really was this moment where, and I think you could hear it too, like in the announcers, like you could hear Bill Worrell, you know, as he's like calling the plays and everything, thinking, you know, wow, this guy's like really, really good. Like, I don't think anybody was expecting that level of, you know, that level of burst from him, that type of a game in his first outing as a Rocket, which, you know, really you're right, set the tone for his entire career here in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, it's a road game, his first ever game with any of his teammates. I mean, I can't imagine they had a whole lot of time to gel, considering that the trade happened right before the season. And just to see him just completely dominate, I mean, it was just crazy. Because, I mean, I like Kevin Martin. He was a good player. But just to see that level of excellence from Harden, it was just – it was definitely an eye-opener.
It was the start of something new here in Houston. I think everybody did feel that, you know, right away, is, you know, because there were the years where it was just, okay, the T-Mac Yao era is over. They're trying to rebuild. They haven't quite gotten that next guy yet, quote-unquote. And as soon as Harden had that game, I think, again, even though it wasn't necessarily, oh, this guy's going to be a future MVP candidate, I think that was the game right after that people thought, okay, this is a guy that you can build around. This is a guy that can, you know, can be the guy for the organization moving forward.
Yeah, and just kind of just looking back at that roster that they had back then, it was just amazing that, not to go too far off into the other season, but just thinking about the roster that he had to play with to get to the level that he was getting to. I mean, he was playing with, and don't get me wrong, Carlos Delfino was a good player, but I mean, Carlos Delfino, Omer Asik, Marcus Morris, before he actually became a good NBA player. Just looking at the roster, it's just crazy to know that everybody was focused on him, and he's still putting up these just amazing numbers in his first year.
Jeremy Lin and Chandler Parsons is arguably, yes, his second best players. Yeah,
exactly.
All right, and so kind of as we're rolling through these games, the next one that I have on my end comes on the back of the 22-game winning streak. And so this is a game that I was lucky enough to be at. This is one of my cherished Rockets memories, is being at this game with my dad for the 22nd win. And, you know, all the different things that went into this game, you know, Kobe Bryant really, you know, having himself a very Kobe-esque game, going 11 for 33, thanks to the defense of Shane Battier. Rafer Alston turning into prime Ray Allen, hitting 8 from 11 from behind the arc. Tracy McGrady not having a great game by any stretch of the imagination, just 4 of 16 shooting. But I do remember, and this is one of those, you know, memories that just occasionally you have those just vivid sports memories, the ones that just shine out brighter than any other one. And I remember in that game, there was a loose ball sometime like early in the fourth or midway through the fourth quarter before the game had really gotten away from the Lakers. And I remember T-Mac and Kobe both diving to the court for it at the exact same time. And Tracy just ripping the ball away from Kobe Bryant on the floor of the Toyota Center. And I remember being so hyped about that. And they're, you know, they're replaying it on the Jumbotron and everything. And I'm just like, yeah, like it was one of those, because the Lakers, you know, they were a top team, right? They were a good team that year. They were in the second seed, I believe, if memory serves, or they were the first seed going into this game, and the Rockets beating them put the Rockets in the first seed and dropped them to the second seed. But either way, just this game, the buildup leading into it because of the 21 wins in a row was something else.
Yeah, because, I mean, you could definitely tell, because, I mean, a lot of the Lakers, they know the history. They know the Lakers had won 33 straight, and they knew that the Rockets were getting closer and closer. And, I definitely remember Kobe at the time, and all the Lakers were just – they played this game like it was a playoff game. They definitely wanted to make sure that the Rockets streak didn't, you know, continue. And – yeah, I just remember like Rafer Alston just having like probably the best shooting game of his life. I've never seen Rafer Alston make that many threes. Just it didn't matter, contested, uncontested. He was just pretty much making everything he shot up.
And then speaking of Skip to My Lou, the little altercation at the end of the game with Saša Vujačić, you know, the little yes, shove, and then, you know, he had a style on him just a little bit, and oh man, that was street ball Rafer coming out, just trying to show up a little bit. Now I know I said we would break this up as far as, you know, regular season and then playoffs in the final segment, but we are running a little bit long in this segment, so we'll get to the game that you and I both picked as a great regular season game, the James Harden overtime three-pointer against the Warriors from the 2019 season last year. We'll get to that in just 1 second, but first I have a quick word from our friends over at Blinkist. So let me tell you guys about one of the most useful apps on my phone. Basically, you know, sometimes it's hard to find the time to sit down and read, and if you don't have free time, you can't you know, work on your own personal development. Or look, Blinkist takes the trouble out of that. It's this incredible app that works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and actually condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can listen to. So like, I use Blinkist when I'm in the car, running, you know, to and from work, running errands, whatever. Blinkist is great. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You can go to Blinkist.com/MBA and try it for free for 7 days. And you can save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. And remember, you'll also save 25% off a new subscription, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with LaShard Binkley of Space City Scoop and Overtime Heroics. Now, as I mentioned, heading out of that last segment, we've got the James Harden overtime winning three-pointer. Just one of the most iconic shots, the reaction after the game, the buildup in that game. And of course, it matters so much because it happens against the Warriors, right? The history between these two teams, you know, one of the best rivalries in sports to date right now.
Yes. And it's just, it probably made it even greater because if my memory served me correct, this was around the time where Harden was kind of in the midst of his just crazy 30-point game streak. And he was doing this without Chris Paul.
The unguardable tour.
Yes. He was doing this without Chris Paul, without Eric Gordon. It was on TNT. It was just Kevin Harlan was calling the game. It was just kind of a perfect storm.
And I think, too, you know, and it's funny that in this season, and here's the thing, right? I feel like there are some Rockets fans that have like ill will towards Chris Paul. And I'm just like, I don't get that. I appreciate what he did here for two seasons. And the fact that James Harden, you know, walked into Oracle and handed the Warriors a loss in overtime. And then what, like a month or two later, Chris Paul does the same thing without James Harden. You know, I think it's funny that the Rockets went 3-1 against the Warriors in the regular season, you know, last year. And unfortunately, it just didn't play out the right way in the playoffs. But this game, you know, Harden, 44 points, 15 assists, 10 rebounds, triple-double. I think that gets lost in translation sometimes when talking about this game. And Clint Capella, too, had himself a really huge night, 29 points, 21 rebounds to kind of, you know, get this game within reach. But I just remember, I think I've had this thought before or shared this feeling before, but there are some times, like at the ends of games, you know, especially while Chris Paul was here those couple seasons, that, you know, there were times when I'd feel more comfortable if the ball was in Chris's hands as opposed to James's hands. But this wasn't one of those times. Like, I remember James, you know, the inbound going into James and just thinking, he's going to hit this. Like, I was so fully convinced. I remember standing in front of my TV thinking, this shot's going to go in. Like, and then sure as hell, it happens. And I think I screamed like in my bedroom, like watching this game because of how hyped I was.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Because I remember just screaming and actually coming and waking my wife up and making her come watch the replay. It was just, that's how crazy it was. And just the fact that they were down by 20 plus points in that game. And I can just imagine what they were saying about them at halftime on TNT. And it was just kind of just how everything just fell into place for that overtime. It was just probably definitely one of the greatest regular season games I've ever watched.
Yeah, and I'll have to, you know, shout out to Ben Dubose here, but, you know, Draymond Green absolutely fouled James Harden on that shot too.
Yes.
Because he undercut the hell out of him. But, you know, that they're not going to call that. So had to throw out a little referee shade in honor of Ben. But
that's always a good thing to do.
Right. All right. So with that kind of covers our regular season games, which lets us get into the playoff games that we have picked. So I'll let you serve up your first playoff game, LaShard.
So the first one I had was the Ralph Sampson game winner back in 1986. Just the whole series was just kind of a weird thing because, of course, the Lakers were at kind of the peak of their dominance and they had been to the finals every single year in the 80s, except for the one time the Rockets beat them earlier in that decade. Of course, the Rockets came in as underdogs. They lost the first game. It kind of just seemed like the Lakers were going to steamroll them. And then the Rockets go off and win three straight. This game kind of went back and forth. And what made it even more remarkable is that Olajuwon actually got tossed in the fourth quarter of that game and in a fight with Mitch Kupchak. And then at the very end, the Roxas were trailing by three with under a minute to go. And then Robert Reed hits a three. And then Ralph Sampson, of course, everybody knows, hits that, you know, miraculous shot that sent the Rockets to the finals against the Celtics.
So remind me, this was because I'm trying to remember if I know this play off the top of my head. This was like that turnaround, right? Yes.
That kind of all in one motion.
Yeah.
Just over the back of his head, kind of just threw the shot up and it bounced in. And I just remember Michael Cooper laying on the ground, like, what in the world just happened? It was just crazy.
Okay. Good stuff there. And remind me, which year was this again?
This was 86, the Western Conference Finals.
There we go. And this is the one that sent him to the finals against the, yes. This was first finals? No.
This was the second finals. Second they actually went to the finals and faced the Celtics earlier in the decade with like Calvin Murphy and Moses Malone.
That's right. You know, it's honestly one of the, if there is a silver lining to this, you know, current NBA hiatus, right? That's one of them, is I've been able to kind of beef up my Rockets history knowledge a little bit by going back, watching YouTube videos, chatting with people who, you know, actually do remember some of the history of the team and stuff like that. And so that's been something that I've been able to, you know, do on my end. And that's something that I suggest all younger Rockets fans, you know, if you're under 30 and you're a Rockets fan, go check out some of these highlights. Go look at some of the history of the team, you know, because there's tons of YouTube videos out there. There's tons of articles and stories out there that you can read to kind of, you know, get a glimpse into the past and kind of see what this team has done before your fandom really started, which I think is a fun thing to do in my downtime. So definitely a good start to the playoff games that we're talking about. Hang on. I lost my playoff games. Where'd they go? Where are my tabs? Okay, there we go. I've got like 17 Google Chrome tabs pulled up.
I'm the same way.
Right. So my first one, you know, not, even though we just finished talking about the Lakers, it feels like, with the 22nd win, but that's the first playoff game that I have pulled up that really comes to mind is one, you know, that was the, so it's 2008-2009 season. Unfortunately, T-Mac's already gone down to injury, you know, just the constant knee issues, not able to make it through that season. So you've got, you're relying on Yao Ming and at the time Ron Artest, who is now what, Meta Ford Artest, I think is his new name or something like that.
Yes, I saw. He just changed it again.
Yeah, so he's not, but he'll just always be Panda Friend. Shout out to Alan if he's listening. But anyways, so this game, one, this was the first time the Rockets broke out of the first round since the early 90s or since the mid 90s, which I think was huge, is they beat the Trailblazers in round one. They finally end this Rockets curse of not being able to escape the first round, which was amazing, right? Because they were up 3-1 against the Mavericks. You lose that series, you lose back-to-back series against the Utah Jazz. This team, for whatever reason, you know, through the 2000s, just hadn't been able to push through that wall and get past the first round. And that was one of the reasons that Tracy McGrady faced, you know, a lot of criticism, was just constantly saying, oh, he's never going to make it out of the first round. Now, obviously they did it without T-Mac, but he was still on the roster, so it still sort of technically counts for him. But this game, right, the Lakers are favored. They're so heavily favored in this game. And the Rockets come into Staples and drop the hammer on him. Yao Ming with, what did he have? 28 points. Meta World Peace, 21 points. Aaron Brooks, 19 points. I mean, this team, you look at some of the players on that team too, and they would really shine in today's NBA.
Yeah, and just I just remember that entire series. It's just watching, if I'm not mistaken, this was the series also where Aaron Brooks, I don't know if you remember the alley-oop, pretty much from out of bounds play to alley-oop to Aaron Brooks, watching Ron Artest. At the time, everybody didn't know he was going to be leaving the next season, but just watching Ron Artest and Yao Ming play together, this was probably, I would say, the most dominant Yao pretty much had been his entire career was during this series.
I mean, definitely. And what really sucks is if memory serves, he never really recovered from the injury in this series, because I think he tried to come back, or he rehabbed the next season and then tried to come back the following year and played like five games. And this was really like, this was his peak, you know, and it's always that big what if of, you know, what if he hadn't dealt with the injuries, because he was, and people are going to argue and say Dwight Howard was more dominant. But in every matchup that Yao and Dwight played against each other, Yao washed Dwight Howard every single time. Dwight had no answer for Yao's dominance. So I will maintain that Yao was the best center in the NBA during this time.
And it was just watching him in his rookie year to up until that time, just how different he was. He went from kind of like a shy player that will fumble the ball, that really couldn't get his footwork down, to probably having some of the best footwork I've seen from a center since Hakeem.
And that comes from a lot of the one-on-one sessions with Hakeem. And that speaks to Yao's ability to learn, his greatness, his you know, just ability to play the game. Because let's face it, Dwight got the same attention and love from Hakeem that Yao did. You know, he spent plenty of summers with Hakeem trying to learn his moves, trying to become a better post player. And Dwight just never had the touch, never had the ability to shoot that Yao did, whether it was just inherent, natural, whatever you want to call it. Yao was just, you know, Yao was the most natural shooting big that we probably saw since Hakeem. And I don't think that's a stretch, because all the dominant bigs, nobody had a touch like Hakeem until Yao.
Yeah, and I think that also comes from what we were talking about earlier. When he was playing over in China, it wasn't about dunking and highlight plays. It was more fundamentals. So I think he had a lot more time to work on his fundamentals while he was over there. And you kind of started to see that later on in his career.
Also, in case anybody gets mad really quick, well, I don't think anybody here is going to get mad, but just because I want to throw it out there for clarity, Dirk Nowitzki's a power forward, Tim Duncan's a power forward. I'm not counting them in this conversation about centers, okay? They are all-time greats, and even though they played for the Spurs and for the Mavericks, I'm not taking away any of their greatness, but when I'm talking about shooting touch and bigs, I'm talking centers, and I'm talking Yao and Hakeem. So there we go. Yes, just wanted to get that clarification out there. All right, well.
Nobody gets angry about that, for sure.
Right. So that game, again, you know, phenomenal game. Let's jump back into your next playoff game.
So my next playoff game was the 1990, during the 94-95 season. I'm sorry, 93-94 season, where the Rockets were down. They had already blown two games against Phoenix at home, and this is when they were going to Phoenix, and this was game three, and they were already down double digits in that game as well. And of course, if they lose the game three, they probably lose a series, and clutch city probably never happens. So they're down double digits in the first half. Second half, Vernon Maxwell has probably his greatest game of his career. He goes off and scores 30 points in the second half, and the Rockets end up beating them that game. Of course, end up going to win the series, and it's probably one of the most remarkable things I can remember, because they were pretty much dead in the water. Phoenix had their number. The Rockets had already blown two games. And I think this was right around the time where they started saying choke city. So this game was, to me, is probably top three biggest Rockets game in history.
And, you know, Vernon Maxwell, I feel like he doesn't get enough credit. And I feel like it's been happening more so lately, because again of the hiatus and kind of people going back and rewatching film and, you know, visiting, you know, thinking about older teams and whatnot. So I think he's been getting a little bit more credit, you know, in the last month or so, 2 months or so. But people kind of, I guess he's not, I don't want to say he's a footnote, but like, you think about those Rockets championship teams and everybody jumps to mind, it's Hakeem and Clyde. And it's like, no, Clyde was only here for half a season, you know, before that, for that second championship. You know, you got to give, you know, you got to give Mad Max his due credit.
Yeah. And I think, like you say, a lot of people forget that, because of course, you know, Maxwell didn't play most of the 95 playoffs with the whole situation that happened with him leaving the team. So a lot of people forget that in 94, I mean, he had a lot of great games in 94.
He was the Rockets' second best player, right behind Hakeem.
Exactly. And he was probably their best defender. So he was definitely one of the most pivotal players in that 94 championship. And during that game, I mean, Hakeem, of course, had his great game like he always does. But if Maxwell doesn't go off in that second half, like I said, I don't think it's, you know, overstating it when you say they lose that game. They probably don't win a championship the next year, and we're probably still talking about the Rockets trying to win their first championship ever.
Yeah, and I think something too that kind of goes into when you're talking about these teams that are striving for, you know, the ultimate victory, you know, winning a championship, is it does take a team effort. You know, you can have your alpha dog, your number one option, be an all-time great like Hakeem or, you know, like James Harden, but you need other guys to step up along the way. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. I don't think there's any team. This could be a hyperbole because I haven't like slogged through all of Basketball Reference trying to, you know, figure this out. So I'm just speaking off the cuff here, but there's probably not a single team that you can point to and just say, yeah, there was one guy and he did everything every game and nobody else helped him along the way. And he still won, you know, was able to win championships because of it. You know, I think every team at some point has, you know, their second or their third guy step up and have a big game to help out along the way, right?
Yes, and I don't want to go too much into another subject, but this is kind of the argument I always have with people when they talk about individual comparing two players. When people compare Harden to other players, they always bring up rings. When I say, well, it's a team game. That's a team accomplishment. You have to separate individual players from team accomplishments. And there's no way, even Michael Jordan, he didn't start winning until he got Scottie Pippen, until they start bringing people like Bill Cartwright, Ron Harper. So just to say, well, if you don't win rings, you're not a great player, to me, that's always like a faulty argument.
Yeah, no, and it's, if one, tangents are totally cool, man. We can go on tangents all the live long day. Yes. The best part is this is the final segment, so there's no more breaks that I have to hit. So, you know, we are cruising. But in that same argument, right, let me ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick.
Sure.
If you take rings out of the argument, give me where it's, well, I'm not going to say give me your top five. If you take rings out of the argument, list off the best shooting guards in NBA history. Take rings out of the argument, just sheer talent.
Oh, so if you're going sheer talent, it's definitely Jordan, Kobe, and Harden. I know people always like to say Dwayne Wade's in front of Harden, and the reason they say that because of that one season that Dwayne Wade led the team to the championship. To me, if you take that out, if people would just kind of put aside their Harden hate, which I know is hard for some people to do, talent-wise, Harden is a top three shooting guard for sure.
I want to say almost firm agreement with you. I wouldn't be upset if somebody put Dwayne Wade ahead of Harden. And if only because of the first two that we listed, right, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, one thing that you do have to recognize, and then you can say the same thing for Dwayne Wade, is their defense outclasses James Harden by quite a bit. And that's the one area where I'm just like, if you are comparing, and we're taking rings out of the conversation.
Yes.
If you are comparing Dwayne Wade and James Harden, you think about the offensive contributions Dwayne Wade gives, but in addition to how stellar of a defensive player he was, and I can see the argument for maybe placing him ahead of James. I wouldn't be upset if you were to say D Wade is third, Harden is fourth. I'd be okay with that. Either one is fine by me. But that's a testament to your argument about rings culture.
Yeah, and the only reason I say that about Harden and Dwayne Wade, I think a lot of people don't value Harden's passing enough. To me, he has Hall of Fame credentials when it comes to passing. He's probably one of the best passers of all time. And I don't think I'm kind of going overboard with that. And I think to me, his offensive game is just so much higher than Dwayne Wade's. And of course you could say that about defense with Dwayne Wade and Harden, but just the overall skills to me, Harden is above Dwayne Wade. But again, I can see either way with that. But even if you add rings in, I've always argued back and forth that Harden, to me, is still top four with shooting guard, even if you add rings into the equation.
Yeah, and once he gets that first, that elusive first ring, then the argument becomes even easier to put him at number three, right behind Jordan and Kobe. We'll dig ourselves back out of that rabbit hole that we went in. But so back to our next playoff game, we got the Rockets comeback against the Clippers, you know, on the brink of elimination, down 3-1, saved by the likes of Josh Smith, Corey Brewer, Jason Terry, Terrence Jones, and yes. Who is it? Who was the five in the game? Was it still Dwight as the five in that game?
So Dwight played a little bit. Pablo Prigioni actually had some time during that. I remember watching that game. So it was just kind of a ragtag group of players that they had together.
And I don't know why people use, you know, Harden sitting on the bench as an indictment of him. It's not it shouldn't be a negative on Harden. If anything, it should be credit to Kevin McHale for having the stones to say, you know what, this group of guys has something flowing, right? There's some, you know, something that, you know, numbers can't explain, that this group of guys just has, you know, has the right stuff right now. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, they had it going, and they were able to get this comeback win that didn't look possible, right? Because the four games leading up to this, I don't know if people remember, the Clippers had won every single game against the Rockets convincingly until this game. You know, the one win that the Rockets had was 115-109, just by a couple buckets. You know, every other win for the Clippers was like a 20 to 30 point win, or at least a double digit win in the first game. Clippers walked into Houston and beat the Rockets 117-101, which was, you know, kind of a big upset since the Rockets were the two seed. So,
and if I remember correctly, Chris Paul actually missed the game at the beginning of that series, and they still won. So yeah, they pretty much dominated that series up until that point.
Right. And that was quite literally the turning point in that series. Something happened mentally after that loss where the Clippers just fell apart, and then the Rockets proceed to win game 6, 119-107, and then they win game 7, 113-100, and move on to the Western Conference Finals to unfortunately eventually lose to the Golden State Warriors, but we won't talk about that.
Unfortunately, the Warriors again.
Yeah, but Josh Smith's heroics will always be that little footnote in Houston sports history where, you know, I just imagine talking about this game like 10, 20 years from now, and you're like, yeah, you know, back in my day.
I'm getting close to that, yes.
Oh, man. All right. And let's go back to your last playoff game that we got.
So last one I had was the Rockets defeating the Warriors. This was the 2015, right around the time of the Memorial Day floods in Houston, where the Rockets were already down 3-0. The series, I mean, it was pretty much over. But I just remember the Rockets didn't go in. They didn't quit. Harden had probably one of his best games of his career. That's a game where he had 45 points. Dwight Howard had a great game that game. Josh Smith had a great game. And I just remember, you know, knowing the series pretty much over, but seeing that the Rockets just didn't quit and just, like they like to say on TNT, 1-2-3 Cancun, they didn't just give up. They actually fought back and won that game. And then after the game, I remember them putting up an announcement on the board saying, no one leave. There's a weather emergency outside, and everybody being stuck inside the Toyota Center. Probably, I think if I remember correctly, pretty much the entire night.
Yeah, and I remember like reading stories like Dwight Howard's like playing catch with fans and stuff like that, yes. Like, you know, hanging out on the court, trying to, you know, keep people's minds off of what was going on, which, you know, I thought was pretty wholesome. But man, just thinking about how that series could have played out a little bit differently, you know, it's just, you think about what Dwight and Harden could have accomplished together had you know, a few things broken their way a little bit differently. And, you know, then that following season with, you know, Ty Lawson, and just that team should have been able to accomplish so much more. And what's the opposite for, you know, greater than the sum of their parts? Cause they were like the sum of their parts should have been something great. And then it was like worse somehow. I don't know. Yes.
And it's crazy because at the beginning of that series, both of the games they lost in Golden State, both were close. I mean, I remember a game two, if I remember correctly, that was a game where Harden had a chance to win at the end, and for some reason, Dwight Howard threw it back to him in a double team. And I mean, that series definitely could have went a totally different way.
Yeah, and sports are always weird like that. You think back and you're like, man, it's just this one thing breaks a little bit differently. This one shot goes in, you know. Shoot, you think just to last season, right? You think about the Kawhi game winner against the 76ers. That shot doesn't go in. Game goes to OT. You know, maybe the Raptors are eliminated. Maybe the 76ers may – I just – you know, it's so weird with sports thinking about how one little thing can butterfly effect throughout the whole league and cause massive changes.
Yes, and unfortunately, as Rockets fans, we know that all too well.
And speaking of all too well, that's the last game we got on our docket. The Rockets game 5 win over the Warriors 98-94, the game that everybody remembers for being the hamstring game, but I remember it just as Well, obviously, I still remember it as a hamstring game, but I also remember it for what it was, which was hands down, I think, one of, if not maybe the greatest game that I've ever witnessed live. Just thinking about the stakes in this game, how hard these two teams were just battling. And I think a lot of people forget that this was such a defensive series, like down the line, those really just that game four, game five, you know, how close things were. That, you know, the games that the Rockets won, they won with defense. Because you look at the scores from the games, you know, looking through the series, right? First Rockets win 127-105. You know, holding Golden State to 105, that's a huge margin. Second win, you hold them to 92. Third win, you hold them to 94. You know, the games they did win that series, they won with defense. And, you know, you're looking down the box score, and the Rockets didn't have nobody had a phenomenal game. I mean, Eric Gordon was the team high with 24 points. But man, just the CP3 hamstring, how that game actually ended was such a flurry of emotions. I don't think I've ever been that emotional about a sports win in my life because of that moment.
Yeah, and it's just that Chris Paul on the ground holding his hamstrings was kind of just like burnt into my memory, unfortunately.
Right. I remember back before I had any kind of a substantial following on Twitter, ESPN tweeted out something like a year or something ago about most devastating sports memory or something like that. And I didn't even write anything. I just went and found the picture of Chris Paul limping, yes, you know, with his little like torn compression shorts or whatever, reaching, yes, down at his thigh. And I remember tweeting that, and it like blew up under the ESPN tweet. And this was before I knew how Twitter really worked. And I was just like, oh, well, I guess there's a lot of people who can relate to this one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's almost like I think to myself, like, that's bad. And then you have the 27 minutes in a row. It's just that whole series, I just kind of just want to wipe out of my memory.
I know. It's just, if a couple things break a little bit differently, you know, things could be very different right now here in Houston. But I'm not going to say I wouldn't change it, but you know, I'm excited for the team that they currently have with Russell Westbrook and James Harden. I do sometimes miss Chris Paul, but I look forward to what this team, you know, is going to be able to do further down the line.
Yeah. And I think people, hopefully they're finally realizing that Russell Westbrook is actually a pretty good player. I mean, at the beginning of the year, he started slow because he didn't have time to rehab at all during the offseason. It took him time to get used to his teammates. But I mean, after 2020 hit, he's had probably been a top 10 player in the league.
Easily, you know, and part of that had to do with the Rockets, you know, putting the right pieces around him, but also his own transformation. You know, he made the active choice to stop shooting threes, to focus on, you know, what he excelled at. And then the Rockets said, all right, if you're committed to doing that, and we're committed to putting a team around you that can maximize your strengths. And, you know, hence that's how we got small ball. And now we're seeing the fruits of that labor by Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni to, you know, allow Russell Westbrook to flourish in this new system, which, you know, surprisingly OKC wasn't able to do during his entire time there, apparently.
Yeah, it's just funny just watching old OKC highlights and watching pretty much the entire lane clog the entire game. It's just amazing that he was able to do what he did, you know, those that MVP year and all the triple doubles, which is kind of funny I say that now, because I don't know if I was saying that back then, but it is kind of amazing watching, you know, how he was able to thrive and how much better he's going to be now with all the room he has.
Right. And look, I don't care if he's a Houston Rocket right now, that MVP sitting in his house should still have James Harden's name on it. I don't care.
Hopefully he lets Harden, you know, takes it over to his house. Cause yeah, it should probably be in his display case at Harden's house. Instead.
Could you imagine if Westbrook like pulled up like in with his convertible or whatever to Harden's place and just had like the MVP trophy strapped into the passenger seat? Just like, what's up? What's up, James? Like, I wonder if they talk about that. Like, I wonder if there's any beef between them, or if they like jokingly like, you know, mess with each other about that award. Because I know that as fans, we like to get, you know, get our feathers ruffled about that kind of stuff. But you know, they're so close off the court that, yeah, you know, I wonder if they actually, if either of them are actually bothered by it, or if James just, you know, it's water under the bridge for him or what. But
I think he's probably more bothered by last year's MVP. I can imagine.
I would agree with that quite a bit. Yeah. Definitely the NBA media was ready to hand it to Giannis, unfortunately. But all right, man. Well, Lashard, we appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. As per the usual, when I have a guest on, like to let you have a chance to plug all your different stuff here at the end of the podcast. Let us know where we can find you and all your content.
Definitely. Like we mentioned earlier, I'm a senior writer for Overtime Heroics. I'm also a contributing writer for Space City Scoop. I also run my own Rockets fan page on Facebook called Rockets for Life. And you can find me on Twitter at H-Town, the number 4, Life 40. And like I said, I definitely appreciate being on. I've been listening to Locked on Rockets for years, and it's definitely been a pleasure.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you being here one more time for Lashard Binkley from Space City Scoop and Overtime Heroics. So that is going to do it for our episode today. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.